All right, so this is the third episode of People Kind Politics, and today we'll be talking about Erin O'Toole. This is a People Kind of Canada episode. I'm Matthew.
I'm Taylor.
And yeah, so we're still, you know, we're still figuring out the format of this podcast. You know, podcasting, it's hard. It's one of the hardest jobs that you can do.
I know, that's why literally anybody can pick it up and do it, because of how difficult it is.
What?
I don't know. I was just trying to make a bit about how it's so popular to do and easy, but yeah, didn't
see,
quite
this
land.
Is a perfect example, folks. You know, you think it's hard to just spit fire on the fly. It's
wow,
not.
Yeah. So you're gonna cut our other opening where it fell short for you, but now you're keeping me being bad at the bits. I see how it is. This is what happens when you're not the one editing, people. You get thrown under the bus.
The editor has all the power.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll take the fall this time for the people. You know, I'm doing this for them.
Yeah. Okay, so in our last People Kind episode, we kind of did a long introduction. We're doing away with that this episode. We're going to be focusing solely on Erin O'Toole. And then, as I've mentioned before, on every other episode will be a news episode. So that's where we can talk about the news and things that interest us and horrify us in Canada. We're going to get right into it. We're going to talk about Erin O'Toole, who is currently the Conservative leader. He's the leader of the Conservative Party here in Canada, which is right now the official opposition against Trudeau's Liberal Party.
Ooh. What a title.
Okay, so let's get into the biography section of Erin O'Toole. After the biography section, we'll talk about some major events in his life, some news stories worth talking about, and then we're going to go into the gaffe corner where we're going to discuss some of the gaffes that Erin O'Toole has committed so far, and then on to cool person shit, which is essentially just miscellaneous, and the name will probably change by a later episode. All right, so Erin O'Toole was born in 1973 to John O'Toole and Molly O'Toole. So this is 2 years after Trudeau. So, you know, despite looking like 20 years older than Trudeau, he's actually 2 years younger than him.
Aww. It's a little baby compared to Trudeau. Wow.
Yeah. Which is funny because the rhetoric around Trudeau is always like, oh, look at this little boy, you know, coming into the House of Commons and, you know, dragging mud around the floor and, you know, peeing, missing the urinal, you know, as, you know, little boy stuff, I guess. I don't know.
Of course. Yeah, totally. Everyone says that. Mm-hmm.
But Erin O'Toole's the baby. Erin O'Toole's the real baby of the House of Commons. A 49-year-old baby?
Don't ask me to do math.
So, his father, actually, at the time of Erin's birth, he worked at General Motors, and it wasn't until 1995 that he worked as an MP, a provincial MP for the Ontario government.
Okay. All right. So this is a family thing. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's another story of, you know, the son following in his father's footsteps. It's a heartwarming tale, you know?
You love to see it, people.
Yeah. Except John O'Toole went into provincial politics, whereas Erin O'Toole would eventually get into federal politics. We're going to talk a bit about his childhood for a bit here. So he was born in Montreal. The family moves to Ontario, first to Port Perry, and then to Bowmanville. And at the age of 9, actually, Erin O'Toole's mother died of breast cancer. So.
Aww, terrible.
Yeah, you know, it's sad. I mean, such a young age, too. I know Justin Trudeau lost his father to, I think, cancer as well, but Justin Trudeau was, I believe, 28 at the time or so.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't feel sad about your dad's death after 20.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how that works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Erin O'Toole, he graduates from Bowmanville High School, and he immediately joins the Royal Military College in Kingston. In 1991, which is a part of the Canadian Forces. You know, you go into this Royal Military College, you graduate, and usually you go into the, you usually become an officer, or, you know, you're not going, you know, you're not hitting the boots in Vietnam, you know. You know, you're not infantry when you go to the Royal Military College in Kingston.
Right.
Yeah, so Aaron O'Toole, you know, he studies history and political science, and throughout his life, he's always said that he loves history. History is his big thing. He's a big history buff.
That's so interesting.
So after Kingston College, he serves as an air navigator in the Air Command, eventually attaining the rank of captain. He first went to Winnipeg. Yeah.
Wow.
He lived in the Peg, which is where Taylor is from.
Stop. Please stop doxing me. It's okay. We've said this before.
Winnipeg's a big city.
It's pretty big, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so from Winnipeg, he goes to Nova Scotia, and that's where he spends most of his time, mostly aiding in search and rescue missions and flying helicopters.
Ooh, he's one of those guys, helicopter guys.
I don't know. There's something kind of cool about flying a helicopter. I kind of admire it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think I'm just thinking of, like, the copters, as in cops. Like, you know, the ones that Winnipeg owns for whatever goddamn reason, and they just go around and wreak havoc for no reason and be super loud. But I guess it's a bit different if you're actually doing something important.
Them?
That's what I call them. Thank you very much.
Oh, you point them out and, like, that's a cop term, folks. Look at that right there.
Yeah.
Bunch of flying pigs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I make sure to put extra emphasis on the cop. So it doesn't fall flat, of course. We don't want that.
Yeah, you're doing your part for the movement there, Taylor.
Thank you. Yeah, this is my contribution to abolition, just to point at a helicopter every now and then. Be like, there it is, boys. It's a difficult job educating the people, but, you know, someone has to do it.
Right, so, you know, after serving for a while, and actually when he was a helicopter pilot and in the Air Command, he received the Sikorsky Helicopter Rescue Award for rescuing an injured fisherman at sea.
Ooh, he rescued somebody. Good job, Aaron. So proud of you.
You know,
doing your job. Look at that.
He flew the helicopter, threw it into autopilot, dove into the sea like Aquaman. No, threw his shirt off first.
Oh.
And took him out.
No.
And the helicopter crashed.
No, sorry.
Actually,
I'm sure he was.
Actually, it was a huge disaster. this is all. No, honestly, you know, as much as we make fun of the people on here, you know, he wasn't, like, shooting people from his helicopter in, like, Afghanistan. So, you know.
Yeah, that's good. I can respect saving people from sea.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's good.
It's cool, yeah. And I will say, if you go onto his campaign website and you read about Aaron O'Toole, it's like, who is Aaron O'Toole? As you're scrolling down the page, a little helicopter flies in the middle of the screen.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, it does. It's really cool.
Oh, my God.
And if you don't scroll fast enough, a fisherman drowns at the bottom of the page.
No.
Yeah.
What's that?
So you gotta
what
quickly,
that is doing
that.
Is it's discouraging you from actually reading. It's like, no, you have to keep scrolling. Don't worry about what he's actually done, which is largely nothing. And
it's campaign strategy, you know.
That's big brain stuff right there.
So, you know, he spends his time in the military. Then he goes into the reserves in Nova Scotia. He meets his wife, Rebecca, and marries her. You know, hence wife.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Confirmed.
Confirmed, Aaron O'Toole did have sex because he also had children.
That doesn't prove anything.
No?
Have we seen a genetic test?
Yeah, we'll get him on Murray, you know.
Exactly.
You are not the father.
So he received his law degree while he was in the reserves. He got his law degree at Dalhousie? Yeah, Dalhousie University in Nova Scotia. And then he returned to Ontario.
Okay. What
and in Ontario.
What kind of lawyer was he?
Yeah, so he was a corporate lawyer. He did, he worked for a couple law firms. He also did, or provided legal counsel for Procter & Gamble and also Gillette. Gillette, the best a man can get. And he did this law practice for about a decade.
Okay.
So, you know, he's a corporate lawyer, and the thing about Aaron O'Toole, you know, a lot of politicians, they'll start up, you know, in politics. You know, they'll rise their way through, or they'll have some things that you can cover and whatnot. With Aaron O'Toole, there's not so much coverage of his life because he's just another suit and tie in Ontario, working at law firms and providing legal counsel that will put you right to sleep. So we're not going to talk too much about it.
Fair.
Yeah.
He could be anybody.
Yeah, he could be your dad.
Looks like it. Could just
he
be...
looks like everyone's white dad, you know?
Yeah. Or uncle. Yeah. I'm still set
or
on
grandpa.
Him being... Yeah. Well...
Great grandpa.
I think that's a little harsh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He does have those shiny blue eyes, you know?
I never really noticed. I'm not like...
It's the first thing I saw when I was researching Aaron O'Toole.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. All right. So now we enter into the stage of politics in Aaron O'Toole's life.
Woo! Let's yeah, baby. Go, baby.
Things get exciting. Not really, actually.
Hell yeah. Oh, well.
No. But we will set the stage for our boy, Aaron O'Toole.
Yes.
So in 2012, he enters politics and he runs in the same district that his father ran in, Durham in Ontario. However, his father ran in the provincial district, whereas Aaron O'Toole ran for an MP. He ran for an MP, you know, a seat in the House of Commons, which is federal. So a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
And he was replacing, so this was a by-election. So he takes over after Bev Oda resigns. Bev Oda is a character. We might get to her one of these days, but she resigned as MP.
Okay.
And he runs as a member of the Conservative Party, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So he wins. He wins the 2012 by-election for Durham, Ontario. And as an MP, he's mostly a backbencher, you know? He doesn't really do too much, you know? He's just there. He's just doing things.
Okay.
However, yeah. Harper takes notice of him, you know? They meet They meet eyes across the House of Commons, or maybe they're on the same side, and he notices those sparkly blues. And yeah. Right. So, you know, he takes... he's an MP. Stephen Harper takes notice, and he gives Aaron O'Toole the spot of Veteran Affairs Minister, replacing Julian Fantino. Julian Fantino was not well-loved. There was actually a lawsuit occurring between veterans and Julian Fantino's department.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I won't get too much into that. But essentially, as the Veterans Affairs Minister, Aaron O'Toole actually does a pretty good job. You know, I will say this about Aaron O'Toole. In things that matter to him... Like veterans, like he does have a heart for veterans, and he did a lot of work for them. And, you know, think what you like about the Army, and obviously I have negative thoughts about them and stuff. Even Canada's peacekeeping army, whatever we have,
mm-hmm.
You know, he does. You know, there are people who do need help and who do suffer and whatnot. So he does good work for veterans here in Canada. And in 2015, I guess I'll just say, like, yeah, so Aaron O'Toole's work as a Veterans Affairs Minister is pretty great, at least as compared to Julian Fantino.
Right.
So the Conservatives, they lose the 2015 election, although O'Toole is able to keep his seat. He gets 45% of the vote, as compared to Liberal MP Karina Trail's 36%. So,
okay.
Yeah, so he stays on, you know.
All right.
And, you know, Harper in 2015, he leaves, and they need to find an interim leader, and Aaron O'Toole, you know, he raises his hand. The teacher kind of looks at him, looks over at Rona Ambrose, and picks her instead.
Oh, so close. You know, picks a
like,
woman.
I know the answer, I know. And the teacher just looks away. You know. Yeah, so Rona Ambrose becomes the interim leader, and it isn't until... 2017 that the actual leader to replace Harper is held.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And during this time that he's an MP, he considers going into provincial politics like his father had. His father dropped out of provincial politics in 2015. So, you know, he thought he would, like, take up the mantle. He ends up deciding not to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, ends up being a pretty good gamble because... Although he does not win in 2017, the leadership of the Conservative Party, he does win in 2019. Or actually 2020, I should say.
Yes.
Yeah. Right, because in the 2017 race, you know, Andrew Scheer takes first place. Maxime, Maxime Bernier take second place before being like, second place is for losers. And he goes and starts the People's Party of Canada.
I mean, he's not wrong, to be fair.
Yeah, no one cares about the silver medal. I'm sorry. It's not important at all.
Nope.
Yeah. So, you know, Aaron O'Toole, he's feeling a bit burned, but he stays on, and Andrew Scheer awards him the position of official opposition critic for foreign affairs because, you know, because the conservatives are currently not in power at this point, and in 2019, when the next election is held, they again do not win the election, and the liberals move from a majority government to a minority government.
Mm-hmm.
Conservatives, a bunch of losers. Nothing can stop the Trudeau train, you know?
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, no. No, Trudeau's bad. Watch our first episode for that. So, yeah, the 2019 election's a wash. Andrew Scheer's a terrible leader. Although, he's not expecting himself to leave after the loss. The party eventually decides that it's time for him to go. And so there's another race that's held, and in this race, Aaron O'Toole again runs for it.
Mm-hmm.
And this time he runs against Leslyn Lewis, Derek Sloan, who are both social conservatives, and Peter McKay. There are others as well. There's a big controversy during the race about whether or not they should be holding a leadership election during the pandemic.
Mm.
So a couple contenders drop out. Others, you know, they can't make the cut. So, you know, in 2020 rather, this race is held. Aaron O'Toole is not looked as kindly as, or Aaron O'Toole is expected to get second place. He ends up getting first place.
Right.
He ends up winning. So Aaron O'Toole, yeah, we'll get more, Taylor will cover more of the election there. So I won't say too much more about that. Since he's been leader of the Conservative Party since the summer of 2020, he's mostly focused on criticizing Justin Trudeau's handling of the pandemic. This includes the Wee scandal, the Governor General scandal, and CERB, as well as other things that have cropped up this year and last year because it's been quite hectic. So he's had a lot to attack. He's had a lot of fodder. Even so, Aaron O'Toole is not looked upon all that favorably by most conservatives. And I would imagine that if an election was held, he would eat shit. He would not do very well.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. So there's a lot to cover here. This is the end of the biography section. I guess I will say also, he's a Roman Catholic, and that will tie into some of our stories going on into this podcast. So yeah. After this, we are going to cover the big stories, the big oopses. Mostly the failures. Yeah, there's not too much good stuff here, but...
No.
Yeah.
No.
But stay tuned. Yeah. We'll be right back after this song. Okay, so our first story...
Story. You have to keep that in.
Yeah. So our first story is that Aaron O'Toole and Peter McKay, during their election to be the leader of the Conservative Party, had a bit of a tiff. See, O'Toole alleged that Peter McKay's campaign had tried to steal his campaign data and videos that he took during Zoom, on Zoom calls.
I'm Jonathan Cancery, and I'm hacking your Zoom.
Ooh, that's not good.
No, it's very bad. You know, Yeah, it's stealing. It's crime. He contacts the police, makes a big fuss out of it in the news. And Peter McKay's campaign initially responds, and it's like, well, you know, Aaron O'Toole did really poorly in the last debate, so, you know, he's trying to create a fuss out of nothing. But it turns out that there was some espionage, you know?
Really?
Really stupid espionage. Only possible in Canada.
So wait, what happened? On me. Woo! Okay.
All right, so settle down there in the back, please. What ends up happening is that there's a MP in Calgary called Greg McLean. He's endorsed Aaron O'Toole's campaign, and he has an intern. And this intern was having troubles logging into Zoom, as I'm sure we all have had at one point or another. You know, very relatable.
True.
And so the O'Toole campaign provides this young intern who is actually a supporter of McKay, which apparently this intern told Greg McLaren. He's like, yeah, you know, I know you really like that Aaron O'Toole guy, but I really like McKay. And Greg's like, yeah, that's fine. Mm-hmm. So it's nothing but love here in the Conservative Party.
Of course.
Yeah, so this intern, you know, he's having trouble getting to Zoom. So he gets the login details from Aaron O'Toole's party to use O'Toole's actual login details. Like the O'Toole campaign's official account.
Okay.
Yeah, so he goes in there and, you know, there's a bunch of video conferences with campaign data, campaign strategy, hours of video, hours of juicy conservative details. So this young man decides to download these videos.
Okay.
All of them.
Well, that, yeah.
he decides to download them.
Okay.
And he, so he decides to give these videos to Jamie Lall, a regional organizer on McKay's team. You know, he meets Jamie Lall on a park bench.
Oh, shit. You know, really?
Kicks the briefcase over.
No, he doesn't. No.
Both stand up. Yeah.
Oh, no, man. That's now I'm disappointed.
No.
Like a park.
No, he emails him.
He's in a hoodie, like passing over the USB, you know, real subtle.
No, he just emails Jamie Lall. He's like, yo, you want some data? You want some dirt? And allegedly Jamie Lall, you know, he's like, yeah. And then he's like, no. Both of the men, the intern who's left unnamed, and Jamie Lall both say that neither of them, or that Jamie Lall did not use the data.
Well, I mean, why is it alleged? Get the cops in here, man. Can't they access all these emails?
Well, when McKay, you know, asked for an investigation to be done, three branches of the police are involved, the RCMP, Toronto Police Service, and the Ontario Provincial Police. So, you know, there's a lot of boots on the ground, you know, a lot of people at work, a lot of ties being straightened, a lot of shirts being, I don't know what police officers do.
No, they tuck
a lot
them
of
in.
Keys being click-clacked.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there is an investigation going on, but, you know, both men, Jamie Lall and the interns, say that nothing occurred. The intern's 19 years old, by the way, so he's just this young freak.
Little baby conservative.
Oh, the worst. Who's a conservative at 19 years old? What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah, who is conservative at 19? This is me calling you out. Were you not conservative? We can't let them know your dark past, though. This will be cut out.
Oh, right. Oh, shoot. I totally forgot about that. A little dark secret there. Yeah. For a future episode, folks. Yeah, we're not going to talk about that now, though. That's okay.
No.
Ooh, I feel so called out. I'm getting a little hot here. Cut the mics.
Cut it all out. We can't isolate our user base like this. They're going to be like, oh, so we have conservatives on this show. We'll get none of my support.
I'm undercover.
Yeah.
No, so Jamie Lall, he says that he didn't use the data even though it was offered to him. And so, you know, when the intern is asked by the CBC in their reporting on this, you know, do you consider what you did to be hacking? The intern's like, no.
I mean, calling it hacking is the stupidest thing you could ever do. You gave them the password, man. Why is it all saved on this database directly on Zoom where any chump could access it with the password? I feel like that's kind of on them. I'm victim-blaming here.
Yeah, so I imagine that the O'Toole campaign gave this to McLean, you know, who is a trusted MP who's supporting Aaron O'Toole, and, you know, why would Aaron, you know, I mean, honestly, the amount of data that was probably available, it's a little irresponsible, you know, especially if, yeah.
Yeah.
So essentially, Aaron O'Toole did a big oops, you know, big yikes, big mistake there.
Yeah, calling it hacking is like when your friend leaves their Facebook page logged in and someone's like, oh, this person is my favorite person and also I suck. Hacked. Oh, like that's the equivalent of what's happening here.
Yeah. 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 Jamie Lal changed Aaron O'Toole's Facebook picture to two boys kissing.
Yeah, totally.
Which for conservatives, oh boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Homophobia.
It's a conservative party.
I mean, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's their brand.
So, you know, the police conducts their investigation, and I tried desperately to find reporting further on this. And I think, like me, you, Taylor, the audience, were like, oh, that shit ain't hacking. It's a bunch of conservatives, you know, knifing each other in the back because that's what they do. Because they're bloodthirsty freaks
mm-hmm.
who are like, yes, I'll be a conservative. I'll take that dark money.
Right. Yeah. I like that it was the 19-year-old kid. And like, this kid is going places, you know. He's already using the tools he has to get who he wants in power. Good on him.
Yeah. The fall of Rome happened because someone gave the wrong person Zoom login details. And the way we go. Yeah. I mean, Aaron O'Toole, you know, he won the election. Yeah, so essentially, you know, Aaron O'Toole, his allegations, you know, it's true. This young man did take the data.
That was like handed to him on a silver platter. Yeah. This is just a classic case of, you know, taking the opportunities in front of you. Would he be a real conservative if he was just like, no, I'm not going to do it? That's not what we do as conservatives, you know?
Yeah, so that's a story. You know, that's the hacking that goes on. Aaron O'Toole, you know, gives away the password. You know, the password 000. And,
yeah.
Or like libsuck 22.
You could see
libsuck 69. And
No, they wouldn't use that. They wouldn't
that's inappropriate. Yeah, you're right. Sorry. So that's the story. That's about it. Taylor, what else has Aaron O'Toole gone up to?
All right. Now it's time to get into the real shit. How Aaron O'Toole won the leadership race, and how did we get here? How did we get here, Matthew? Though, I mean, I'm the one talking about it.
Russian hacking.
Thank you. Yes. So, yeah, people weren't really expecting O'Toole to win the leadership race. Most people, especially at the beginning of the campaigning, everything, were expecting Peter McKay because he has a lot more. What were you saying before, Matthew?
Yeah. So Peter McKay, you know, he was the last leader of the Progressive Conservatives, which was the party that came before the Conservative Party. What ended up happening in like the 90s, I believe, was that the Reform Party was created. The Reform Party became the Alliance of Canada Party, which was led by Stephen Harper.
I hate that so much. I will just say disgusting. Disgusting name.
The Reform Party is gross. And the Reform Party became the Alliance of Canada Party. Stephen Harper was the leader of that, the last one. And Stephen Harper, Peter McKay, you know, they met and they're like, why don't we just put this together? Let's just make this one thing. And so the Progressive Conservatives merged with the Alliance of Canada Party, and they formed the original name, the Conservative Party, getting rid of completely the whole progressive part, being true to themselves. So that's good. So yeah, Peter McKay was the last leader of the Progressive Conservatives. A lot of pedigree McKay has.
Yeah. Thank you, Matthew, for filling in us rubes who don't know how to read books or know anything about Canadian history and politics. Cut this out. I need my credibility. This is completely unusable. But yes, thank you for that. So, you know, most people were thinking that McKay, based on his history with the Conservative Party, you know, back in the Harper days and just his overall involvement, which is, again, long and just he's been around for a long time, and he's done shit. Unlike,
and he's handsome as hell.
I mean, Yeah, comparatively speaking, you know?
See, Justin Trudeau has poisoned me. I'm expecting every one of my prime ministers to be stepping right off the cover of GQ, you know?
Yes, with those luscious locks and, you know, like with O'Toole, imagine him as prime minister. Like, where would my bi-weekly hair updates be? Those just wouldn't happen. And at that point, honestly, I would just give up on journalism. Like, there is nothing in it for me anymore. But okay, we're getting off track here. Okay. Peter McKay, he's a big dog. Big history. He's been around. Aaron O'Toole, you know, we talked about it. He's been around, but nobody was really expecting him to win. So now we kind of have the setup, you know, Peter McKay, he's thought to win just because of his history in the Conservative Party. And then we also have Aaron O'Toole running in the leadership race, as well as Derek Sloan and Leslyn Lewis, who are both social conservatives. So, you know, one of the big things about this election is that O'Toole ran as a true blue conservative. You know, he railed against national media, CBC, we won't really get into that, as well as the far left. And another thing, he had a pretty good campaign team of, like, people who have a lot of experience. And in general, he wasn't afraid to kind of shy away from the issues that social conservatives cared about, like abortion. Well, less so that, like, he wasn't saying, yeah, I love it, I'm down for abortion. Or actually, no, conservatives hate that. He wasn't saying, fuck abortion and fuck gay people. But he was like, you know what?
Well, you wouldn't say that as a social conservative, you know?
Well, listen, the point is, with McKay, he was very explicit in that, you know, he's pro-choice, he's equal marriage. And that, especially with the abortion thing, you know, he's like, it's not even going to be a conversation. I'm not going to restrict access to that. I'll march in parades, blah, blah, blah. Which was kind of off-putting to the social conservative part of the party, which is a pretty sizable percentage.
Yeah. Do you know what he called the social conservatives?
What did he call them?
He called them a stinking albatross.
Yeah, I literally do not understand what that even means. And when I tried to look it up, it was just like articles about Peter McKay. And I was like, is that a fish? First of all, is that what?
Albatross is a bird. It's a large bird.
Okay.
And it's an old, I think it's from a poem or something, but yeah, an albatross around your neck, you know, it's something that like, again, I haven't studied English in a while, but it's something that keeps you down. It's something that it's a bad thing to have around you.
Right.
That's a bad explanation of it, but you know.
Okay.
Yeah. So he called the social conservatives a stinking albatross around the conservative party's neck, which is true, by the way, but also good because fuck the conservatives. They deserve all the pain that they can receive.
But if you're running in a leadership race in the conservative party, that's going to turn some people off. Okay, yeah, because I saw the term stinking albatross used several times, and that McKay, he did say later he regretted using that term because it is kind of alienating those poor social conservatives. With McKay, he's kind of openly hostile to that social conservative portion of the party, which isn't small, I would say. You know, it's you have the two, like half of the leadership race does come from that background. So to kind of openly go against the issues that they care about and also call them, a stinking albatross of the party and to say that, and again, he's not wrong in saying that. It's just if you want to be the leader of the Conservative Party, I guess you have to learn how to work with those people, right?
Yeah, and that's what Aaron O'Toole did very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, so we had Derek Sloan and Leslyn Lewis running, but eventually it did get to the point where they dropped out of the race. And I think Matthew mentioned earlier.
No, they didn't drop out of the race.
Well, what happened? So they were always in it, but because it's a ranked ballot, is that what it's called? Right? You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, with Peter MacKay, he really wasn't, again, he wasn't entertaining the social conservative side of the party at all, whereas Erin O'Toole was going directly to supporters of Derek Sloan and Leslyn Lewis and letting them know that, hey, you know, I want to work with you. Like, I want to make sure your voice is heard. I'm not just going to shut it down. And also, you know, you should consider putting me higher up on your ballot. You know, second choice, maybe? Mm-hmm. Sound good? So,
right, because if someone could vote for Derek Sloan, you know, they put him first place, and then they put second place, you know, Erin O'Toole. And because Peter MacKay didn't, you know, reach out to social conservatives, he was put last on their ballots. So all those votes for Derek Sloan, Leslyn Lewis, largely went to Erin O'Toole in the second and third rounds of the voting part.
Yeah. And again, the social conservatives aren't like a tiny little majority of the conservative party, right? Like, they're out there. So it's important, if you are in a leadership race, to engage with them and try to get their votes, no matter how authentic you're being, you know. I don't know, are we getting into that later, or would I talk about
now? let's get into that now, I think. Okay. Because, you know, if you do have the support of the social conservatives, you know, they have access to money. They have access to a large voter base. And like, if you're Erin O'Toole, you don't have to be like going hardcore conservative on social issues such as abortion, gay marriage, but you can throw them a bone here and there, or you can at least allow them as independent MPs, or rather to allow MPs in the party to act independently. So,
right. You know, he's not going to, again, completely denounce them, isolate them, not recognize their views that they are so very passionate about. He's willing to work with them and make sure they are heard.
This is a huge issue to get into, though, and I feel like this ties in nicely into our next.
That's true, yeah. Unless
you have more to say.
No, I think we went over it pretty well. Like, for me, the biggest thing here is that O'Toole knew how to play the game, you know. He didn't completely he didn't just completely not engage with that part of the party. In fact, he was kind of more than willing. He's like, you know, I'll hear you guys out. I value you. Your opinions are important to me, and I'll make sure that they are recognized. Whereas, again, with MacKay, he just wasn't really willing to engage at all, and in fact, you know, was pretty honest about himself being pro-choice, equal marriage, all that stuff, which, again, I don't think, like, even if that conversation is brought up again, if it's brought up in Parliament, whatever, I can't see those laws being walked back. But I think it's still important to, like, if, again, it's like not saying I agree with this, but if you're in a leadership race in the Conservative Party, you shouldn't just completely shut down and isolate those voters, because that's not how getting votes works. So I think that was the biggest thing for me.
Yeah, exactly. You got to throw the bones. You got to throw the bones to the evangelical dogs. I'm sorry. Evangelicals, there are great evangelical people that I know, personally. I'm sorry. Yeah. But your values suck. I'm just going to stop there.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just going to stop there. All right. So our next story, which is kind of tied to the last thematically, is the expulsion of Derek Sloan from the Conservative Party, and this occurred last January. So Derek Sloan's an MP in Ontario, and he's had a bit of a troubled past. He ran in the leadership race in 2020, as we just said. He came in fourth place behind Leslyn Lewis. He's a social conservative, and he had some problems with his voter base. Progress Report, you know, they reported that Derek Sloan had received a $131 donation from a man called Paul Frum. And Paul Frum is a white supremacist. Yeah, a fairly notorious one, and he's been around for a while. Some of the things that he's done here, let's see. He threw a party for Adolf Hitler.
Oh, well, what do you do? Like a birthday party?
Yeah, I don't think Adolf Hitler made it. I don't think he responded to the RSVP.
What is? Okay. Yeah. All right. That's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And then he also put on events for this white supremacist group called Heritage Front, and he also appeared on stage with David Duke, the former leader of the Ku Klux Klan.
Yes. Okay. Love to see it.
You know, he's not just a Sunday white supremacist. No, he's there all the time. He's a bad dude, honestly. And he lost his teaching license in 2007 after this was...
He was a teacher?
Yeah, he was a teacher.
What kind?
I don't know how he got past the hiring process. Yeah, he was a school teacher, I believe. Oh. He either taught high schoolers or kids. I don't know. So I will say this in Derek's defense. When the contribution was delivered, it was under the name Frederick P. Frum. And the Conservative Party, well, first of all, the Conservative Party first had to let him into the party. He was also a voter in the leadership race in 2020.
Oh.
So, okay, but I should backtrack a bit. So the Conservative Party, you know, this report comes out. Aaron O'Toole is obviously alarmed. Derek Sloan's gone to some trouble in the recent past, and probably before then as well. So they vote as a party to expel Derek Sloan from the party caucus. Now Derek Sloan is an independent and independent MP.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know, the thing is, like, the Conservative Party allowed Paul Frum to be a member. They accepted the donation on Derek Sloan's behalf. Like, the Conservative Party... They process the donation.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they receive a 10% cut as well. So the first thing I'm going to say is, like, yeah, the fact that Paul Frum likes Derek Sloan, that's a bad thing. If white supremacists like you, you should probably, you know, take stock of your life. Take stock of your values.
I don't think Derek Sloan is very concerned, but yes, in general. Yeah. I mean, maybe the Conservative Party should take stock of its values. I mean, you'll get into it more, but...
Yeah, so when this came out that Derek Sloan would be expelled after the vote, Conservative leader Aaron O'Toole said... Caucus expelled him not because of one event, but because of a pattern of destructive behavior involving multiple incidents and disrespect towards the conservatives for over a year. Events of the past week were simply the last straw. But I don't want to be like, yeah, good job, conservatives. You got rid of the bad guy. You're good now.
Yeah.
No, they suck. They still suck.
Yeah. Who knows how many Nazis are actual members of the party and... voting members of the party. Who can say? And I mean, I say Nazi, but I mean white supremacist. Yeah. I'm sure it's a pretty good chunk, so...
Yeah, so, you know, Aaron O'Toole says this is the last straw. So what did Derek Sloan do before this? So I'll quote Janice Dixon from the Globe and Mail here of her reporting. Mr. Sloan has brought unwanted attention on the party on a number of occasions. He previously suggested that Chief Public Officer Theresa Tam, who is of Asian ancestry, born in British Hong Kong, and then who was raised in the UK. He called her a pawn of China. He called into question whether her allegiances were with Canada or China.
Hi, I'm Derek Sloan, Conservative Party of Canada leadership candidate. One of the issues with Justin Trudeau's handling of this situation has been his reliance on the advice of Dr. Theresa Tam. Theresa Tam, we sent an email out today asking, does she work for Canada or for China?
He also sponsored a petition that called COVID-19 vaccines human experimentation and said most children questioning their sexual or gender orientation will just grow out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's all pretty classic conservative stuff.
Well, yeah, especially socially conservative stuff. Yeah. So he's done some yucky things. He's brought some very negative attention to the party. So... But I think also Derek Sloan reveals what the Conservative Party is in a lot of ways. I mean, the tension between the Conservative Party is that you have on one side the economic interests. You know, you have the oil industries, you have the banks, you have, I mean, they also interface with the Liberal Party as well, but you have powerful interests within the Conservative Party that I don't think they care. I don't think they care about who gets married to who. Like, their ideology is focused primarily on accruement and exploitation of capital. But then you also have, you know, the true believers, the social conservatives, who hold these usually evangelical or traditionalist values.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a weird mixture of the Conservative Party. Okay, so the tension between the conservatives within the Conservative Party is manifested in Derek Sloan. You know, he probably aligns very economically with Aaron O'Toole, but he has these social issues, these progressive disinclinations that he has. So, you know, but Mr. Sloan, the main issue with him, and this is from Andrew Coyne in the Globe and Mail, he writes, "Mr. Sloan's crime is not that he is a social conservative, it is that he is an extremist. It is not just that his views are prejudicial and wrong, it is that his manner of expressing them is inflammatory, divisive, and likely to hurt the party." And yeah, I feel like conservatives, I think nowadays they don't like to put forward the fact that they are, or a lot of them have these social conservative views. They have to be like, oh, we're economically responsible. We care about the deficit. We care about, we want to help people help themselves, you know, mm-hmm. small government.
Yeah. Like, I think the thing with the conservatives, to me, I don't see the division as much. I mean, I get it. And I don't know. I kind of like what you just read, how it mentions explicitly. It's not an issue that he really has these views. It's how he expresses them. Because that's kind of how I view the Conservative Party, in that these views, social conservatism, is still very much integral in the party and its platforms and its policies. It's just dressed up in a way that's not the first thing you notice about it. You kind of have to think a bit deeper,
opinion. I would say that, honestly, I think a lot of these people who are in power in the Conservative Party literally don't care. I don't think they care about the social conservative issues.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess that kind of, for me, goes more into the definition of what exactly is social conservatism, because to me, whether or not they care, I mean, it's how is it reflected in the policy they put forward? And being a conservative isn't really just, I mean, a lot of it is economic conservatism, but how does that play into the policies they prioritize? Do you know what I'm saying?
Right. They're interrelated, but they're focusing more on the economic issues before the social issues, but the economic issues affect the social issues.
Very much so, yeah. Like,
but their primary focus for most of them, and this is why Derek Sloan and Leslyn Lewis didn't even get close to first place, is on the economic issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think what I'm trying to say is, if you're putting forward the social conservatism as your main platform, that's not going to work. But I do think that the economics obviously are very much tied into social issues, of course, right? And who gets prioritized, you know, what our approach to economics is. I mean, to me, economic conservatism in itself is very oppressive, obviously, doesn't take a lot of populations into consideration. But I understand what you're saying, and that, you know, if your platform is whatever, abortion bad, that's less interesting to most voters than, you know, the economic stuff.
Yeah, like, I look at someone like Peter O'Toole, and I actually do think that he is probably just as socially conservative.
Do you call
as
him
Derek Sloan
Peter O'Toole?
Or what's that?
Did you call him Peter O'Toole?
I was in the helicopter today, being bounced up and down by some very nice gentlemen about 3 feet from the. From the ground.
Did I call him Peter O'Toole? Yeah, that's the actor's name. That's the actor, Peter O'Toole. I knew that I would eventually fuck up on that. God.
Who is he?
Aaron O'Toole. He's an older actor. We don't have to get into it. Aaron O'Toole, thank you for calling me out. I'm starting to sundown. So Aaron O'Toole, You know, he's probably just as socially conservative as Derek Sloan or Leslyn Lewis, right? But he's politically smart enough to know to shake the hands of both directions. You know, he's smart enough to be two-faced.
Mm-hmm.
Peter McKay, just as economically conservative as Peter O'Toole. However, he probably is like a bit uncomfortable. Like, he probably wouldn't like going to an evangelical church or like a pro-life rally. He wouldn't be comfortable there.
No.
But he likes the conservative values concerning the economics of the economics of Canada. Conservative economics of Canada.
Yeah.
Capitalism.
Yeah. Yes.
Industry.
All that good stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I guess I should circle back to this too, because Erin O'Toole, after the comments made by Derek Sloan on Theresa Tam saying, like, is she for China or for Canada? Erin O'Toole launched a Facebook ad that was like, Erin O'Toole was the only MP to speak out on Derek's behalf.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wait, when was this exactly?
This was during the leadership race.
Okay. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, a little hypocritical. What a snake.
He is a snake.
What
for
a
sure.
snake slithering in the grass.
Like, when I was reading this, I was like, damn, just fucking, when it's convenient, you know, get rid of him.
A2 O'Toole?
good stuff.
Yeah, that's it for my story. There's the theory of conservatism, its position in the world, or its position in Canada, is extremely interesting, but we should move on to our next story.
All right. So our next story is, you know, it's a fun one. It's a more recent one. You know, this is happening in March 2021 during the fucking, what do you call it? I was trying to find what you call these, the conservative convention. That's yeah. it, right? So again, set the stage. We are at this year's conservative convention, and in particular, there is one vote that Erin O'Toole is very, very passionate about, and that is that, you know, the debate on the reality of climate change must end because it is real. And this is O'Toole, again, the now leader of the Conservative Party, saying this. Which is pretty interesting. I have mixed feelings on this strategy, but first, Matthew, what are your thoughts on, again, Erin O'Toole definitively saying climate change is real? Thoughts?
Liar?
Yeah, so before we actually get into kind of what this story is beyond O'Toole explicitly saying, again, it's real, I think I still don't really know what's going on in his head, because I'm trying to think about who he's appealing to with this, because, you know, he says stuff like, we're not going to let the Liberals and Trudeau talk down about us anymore, and that we're stuck in the past, you know, we're going to come out strong against climate change and do all this stuff. But I mean, when I think about people in the Conservative Party and people who vote for the Conservative Party, I'm like, what? Like, how does this serve O'Toole and the Conservative Party? Like, I just don't see it. Yeah, and
he's trying to reach out to the Green voters, because Green voters always vote Conservative, right?
I mean, honestly, the Green Party is
another story.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that, but yeah, it's like it's kind of similar to the NDP strategy, where they're always trying to appeal to the mystery centrist who's suddenly going to change their mind for voting for Liberal on some like weak ass policy that's actually not that radical, because they're trying to appeal to centrists, and like,
take a fucking stand.
Yeah.
If you're a racist, bigoted, anti-climate piece of shit, be that. Let us know who you are.
Yeah.
If you're a socialist, communist weirdo like us, say that you are. Mm-hmm. Stop being so goddamn lukewarm, or I'll spit you from my mouth. That's Jesus talking. That's a Jesus quote.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, that's good context for heathens like me who haven't cracked open a Bible ever in their lives. So thank you. Now I know. But yeah, I completely agree. I mean, one of the things, I don't know if I'd say I have respect for the conservatives, but I feel like you know what you can get with them, right? And one of those things is climate denialism. I'm not mm-hmm. saying it's good, but I'm saying that's one of the things they're known for and one of the things people vote for them for and identify them with. So for him to come out and be like, you know what? Climate change is real. That's like a radical fucking stance in the wrong direction for them, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And he even explicitly said, so this was before the convention happened. I think this was like a couple of days or maybe a week before. He said, I will not allow 338 candidates to defend against the lie from the liberals that we are a party of climate change deniers. We will have a plan to address climate change. They don't right now. Spoilers. It will be comprehensive and it will be serious. So, yeah. So, with all of this context, bring yourself back to March 19th. It was a Friday. Again, I think this was the first day of the convention, and they had a vote. The resolution that they were voting for is that they would have placed a firm statement into the party's policy declaration that, quote, we recognize that climate change is real. The Conservative Party is willing to act. That was it.
Yeah, so, and it's a, I read their policy, all the 100 or so pages of it. I skimmed it.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah. Yeah. So to have that in there would be like, you know, you're reading Harry Potter and all of a sudden you have a page out of Tolkien and you're like, what?
Where did this come from?
Is this good fantasy that I'm reading? And then you flip the page over and it's, you know, YA drivel. But anyways, continue on.
Wow. Coming for Harry Potter. Damn. I've never read it.
Well, J.K. Rowling's on the shit list for everyone now, right?
So. I mean, true. Fuck Harry Potter. And fuck it before just because I didn't care and people like base their entire identity on it. And it's like, you're in your 30s, man. It's like, it's time to move on.
you're a climate change denier, Harry.
Yes. Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, that's a pretty... Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I mean, it's such a small thing. It didn't pass. So that kind of...
Do tell.
Kind of makes Aaron look like an idiot.
Makes Aaron look like O'Toole.
Oh, fucking got him. It's right in the name. That's true. We haven't taken the opportunity yet. Right. But it's like, it's funny how, you know, he was so... passionate and so for kind of fighting the lie that the liberals are saying that conservatives are climate deniers or climate change deniers, but honestly just climate deniers in general. Just climate doesn't exist. But yeah, so for me, like, even after this, even after O'Toole gets like dragged through the mud, thrown under the bus by his own party, he's still posting on Twitter. He's still doing interviews about how, you know, they care about the environment and how he cares about the environment because he's a conservative. And also they don't really, again, they still don't have any kind of policy, but they're working on it.
Is your party just not behind you on this?
No, as you know, Vashi, this week we'll see a court decision because there's a provincial role here. In fact, the provinces have been leading on climate change for many years. In fact, Mr. Trudeau promised to never price carbon unless it was through the provinces years ago. He broke that promise. So I think in the case of our members, they want to make sure that provinces are respected as part of this. And it was too prescriptive in some people's view. But as I said, I will be crystal clear again. We will have a very comprehensive plan in the next election to fight climate change and to make sure that we support an economic recovery in all parts of the country. I'm leader. I'm working on it now, Vashi. It's a priority.
For me, this is just a really puzzling experience to witness. I don't understand what he's trying to achieve. I feel like it could be good for us. Well, I say on the left. I mean, again, I don't feel super strongly about the NDP, and I definitely don't like the Liberals. But for me, looking at this, it has the potential to split votes on the sides of Conservatives to maybe the People's Party of Canada, who obviously we want elected. So those are my thoughts. But yeah, what do you think, Matthew?
Yeah, it's pure political machination. You know, I said that word wrong, but, you know, Aaron O'Toole wants his soup both hot and cold.
A bizarre direction to go in as the leader of the Conservative Party. And, you know, we see that crystal clear when, again, the delegates, everyone votes against it. So, yeah, bad take, Aaron O'Toole. Bad, very, just bad.
Very, very bad take.
Extremely bad. And, yeah, I think that's all I got to say for that section. So.
Yeah. Good job, Aaron O'Toole. Your party voted against you when you tried to be liberal, and now your goose is further cooked. Good job.
Yeah, he blew it.
Yeah. Yep. So now we're going to go into the gaffe corner. And maybe we've said this already, but basically, Aaron O'Toole ran essentially a gaffeless campaign. However, there are two gaffes that we need to highlight. So let's get into it. All right, so welcome to the gaffe corner, where we discuss the gaffes, the goofs, the slip-ups, the mistakes, the slurs that politicians say. Okay, so our first story is O'Toole's comments on prisoners receiving vaccines. So this is from this January, when vaccines were first procured by the Canadian government. 600 vaccinations were set aside for elderly inmates in, I think, federal and perhaps provincial penitentiaries.
Mm-hmm.
And when this came out,
I think federal.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think it is just federal penitentiaries. O'Toole objected, tweeting, "Not one criminal should be vaccinated ahead of any vulnerable Canadian or frontline health worker." You know.
Mm-hmm.
Classic move.
Yeah. A real piece of shit move. I like how he, like, makes the distinction of vulnerable Canadian from, well, and I mean, obviously, you know, the whole criminal narrative, ignoring the fact that, you know, conditions in prisons are very poor. You are around people, you know, you might have your own cell, but it's still really shitty in general being in there. You're around people all the time. Especially for the elderly prisoners, again, who these vaccines were set aside for. You know, I don't think it should be controversial to say, hey, they deserve to get those vaccines when prisons are one of the kind of most at-risk places for outbreak.
Yeah, and these are elderly inmates, you know. They are vulnerable Canadians, you know.
Yeah.
He wants to differentiate between vulnerable Canadians and you know, convicted criminals, but
the implication,
you know,
there is that they aren't human. Whoa, very,
yeah, exactly. He's like, yeah, it's okay if they die, they're just criminals.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, think of all the people that were convicted unjustly, you know. That's one issue. The second issue is that people who commit crimes, they're still people and they still deserve rights.
I totally agree, and I think in general, again, these are the federal institutions specifically. So Canada is responsible for these people.
Yes.
And yeah, they're people. They should get those vaccines. Again, prisons are at super high risk for outbreak. And once it's there, it's like really difficult to control. I mean, there's already outbreaks in a couple of prisons. I know here in Manitoba, Stony Mountain, I'm pretty sure there's still a bunch of cases. So yeah, just a really shitty take.
Yeah. And at the time of this reporting, and this was in January, you know, 3,000 inmates across Canada had tested positive for the virus. Three had already died.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of inmates that would be vaccinated, the elderly inmates, is only 5% of the total population in federal penitentiaries. So, you know.
Yeah. It's like, literally just do it. Yeah.
Yeah, but of course, because conservatives like to harp on criminal justice or criminal injustice, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like, yeah, fuck these inmates, fuck these criminals. You know, they deserve to die. But, you know, guess what? We don't have the death sentence in Canada, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's just not, it ain't right. Yeah. And again, that kind of comes back again to social conservatism, you know, and something they've always been strong on is being tough on crime and all the shit that comes with that. And we see that again here.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know. Yeah. It's essentially, the thing is, the headline here is that he's getting at your reactionary pulse, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's clicking into it. He's like, yeah, that's right. Criminals, they ain't people. And guess what, folks? You could get a vaccination, but those goddamn criminals exactly. are getting your vaccinations instead.
Yeah.
You know, it's dirty. It's reactionary. It's thoughtless. It's heartless. Classic conservative mm-hmm. move.
Yeah, exactly. That's the big thing, right? It's imparting the blame. I don't know if that's the right word to use. It is now onto mm-hmm. these prisoners and criminals, yeah. as he calls them. And again, like, just looking at the mess that has been vaccine distribution, the people who are in charge of getting the frontline workers, those vaccines are, it's provincial anyways. So, and again, we're talking about the federal institution, so it doesn't really, yeah, that shouldn't even come into the conversation, really. Again, he's just redirecting that kind of anger at these criminals, as he calls them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, bad stuff.
Yeah, and our boy, our gremlin boy, Doug Ford,
oh, no.
added in with this. The most dangerous criminals in our country were being put in front of all the most vulnerable for a vaccine.
Shut the fuck up, Doug Ford. He's done such a terrible job with yeah. this pandemic. I don't want to hear anything from him. Again, it's just like kind of changing the dialogue from everything they're doing wrong as leaders. Mm-hmm. And being like, ooh, look at these people getting it before. This is why I can't get you the vaccine, which is no, you didn't have an infrastructure ready. You've been doing a terrible job since the beginning. So fucking yeah. get on it. It has nothing to do with this.
Guys, the criminals, they're taking at least 4 shots of vaccination in their arm at a time. They're sticking it in their toes. They're hiding it. You know,
literally, it's so frustrating, especially with Doug Ford. Oh my God, I'm so salty about that. Him especially, because this entire pandemic and everything with the vaccine, he has been blaming the federal government so much when mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, it sucked, but it sucked for everyone. And yeah. you guys still have so many vaccines just like sitting in the fucking cupboard or I don't know, wherever they store these things. You know what I mean?
Under the bed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Doug Ford should be catapulted into the sea. That's all I'm saying.
If only. And his approval rating is still pretty high. So I'm concerned for Ontario.
Yeah.
Ontario.
I don't know. But yeah, that's essentially it. You know, Aaron O'Toole, classic conservative. It's a classic conservative rhetorical trick, you know? Blame the criminals. Don't look at us. It's those goddamn criminals. Stealing the vaccinations, and it's bullshit. It's bullshit. The numbers don't read out that way. You know, no surprise here. Yeah, nope. That's all I have to say on that.
Yeah, it's a good one. Okay, so yeah, this was not a great gaffe. Aaron O'Toole got called out for saying to a couple of young conservatives that, hey, if you're arguing with the libs and they try to bring up residential schools, just tell them that, you know, they just wanted to provide education. It was fine. Ooh. And this is explicitly, so he was invited to speak, I believe, for the members of Ryerson University's Campus Conservative Club during a Zoom call.
I was a member there.
Huh? You were a member?
No.
I don't even know where Ryerson University is. Do you?
Toronto?
Yeah. So this university was named after Egerton Ryerson, which is a stupid name. Yeah, he's the school's namesake and one of the architects of the residential school system. So I think, yeah, around this time and just in general since last year, we've kind of been like, hey, there's a lot of things named after shitty people, and that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
And this school is one of them. So he was trying to kind of educate these young conservatives again on like, you know what? People are complaining to you about the name. Here's what you say. He just wanted a better life for these children. He just wanted to educate them, which right. is, yeah, not very good.
He Thoughts? Wanted to genocide them.
Yeah.
Literally, though. That's what yeah. the residential schools did. God damn it. No,
absolutely. Like, read the Indian Act. Read a history book. The whole point of residential schools, especially, was to kind of destroy Indigenous kids' culture and assimilate them into the culture we have now. And also, a bunch of kids died there and were buried in unmarked graves and faced a ton of abuse.
A lot of kids, and trauma. Yeah.
Hmm?
Yeah, no, a lot of kids, and efforts are still being done, I know in Vancouver, or in BC rather, to find the locations of these graves, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and in general, you know, either they didn't record the deaths, or they would say, oh, they got sick, you know, shit like that. There's a lot to read about the history of residential schools, the impact mm-hmm. they had on the Indigenous children there, of course, and their families, and just the generational trauma that comes with that, the cultural genocide, the literal genocide. Yeah. So for Erin O'Toole to say one of the architects of that system, you know, he just wanted to provide education to these kids, is, yeah, I would say that's a gaffe for sure. Literally wrong, based on everything we know. Yeah.
No, it's gross. It's really gross because, yeah, like you said, it was an actual genocide that occurred for almost 100 years or more, perhaps. And yeah, to call it an education, that's essentially the propaganda of the state for a long time, you know? We're educating them. You know, we're educating the savage, you know? For him to repeat that in, you know, recent years is horrifying. Like, to speak this way on such a demonstrably terrible thing. It's like calling the Holocaust, like, yeah, they took the Jews to summer camp, you know? Like, no. It's just, yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's that bad.
It is, yeah, it's extremely bad. Yeah, and I mean, one of the big things, again, this school was named after Egerton Ryerson. You know, kids, or I should say, students on the campus are calling for, because there's a statue there too, for it to be brought down. And O'Toole's, mm-hmm. again, this is like him having a Zoom call with the young conservatives and their group at this school. And he's like, hey, here's another thing you can say. Did you know that, yeah, Egerton Ryerson maybe opened some residential schools, okay, but you know who opened more? Pierre Elliott Trudeau. Boom, got him. Like, as mm-hmm. if that's some sick burn. Where, again, I mean, Pierre Trudeau did a lot of shitty things for Indigenous people, you know, go back to the white paper. And I mean, what he's saying isn't necessarily wrong. Yeah, he opened more schools, but by saying that, you're recognizing that it is a shitty thing contribute to the system.
But what about them? What about them? And it's like, yeah, Pierre Elliott Trudeau did a horrible thing as well. What are you saying? Yeah, it is horrible, of course.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a horrible defense.
Totally. Yeah. And he's completely contradicting himself where he's saying, oh, you just wanted to teach these kids, but also Trudeau did it, so he's a piece of shit. Which is like, okay, you're kind of just admitting your entire argument is literally the worst.
You just argued my point for myself. Thank you very much. Logical fallacy. You did it. Yes.
Yeah, you know, worth mentioning, I guess, that he walked it back later.
Sure,
and
yeah,
that, you know, he totally speaks about the harm caused by residential schools all the time, well, regularly. He's just, yeah, and he said, yeah, I said it was to provide an education. It wasn't. I fucked up, guys. Sorry. It's like, okay, you're just apologizing because you got called out. You know, this is what he really thinks about it, I think.
Yeah. You know, as much as Erin O'Toole wants to be seen as socially progressive. He's clearly not. You know, this is this is an easy win. You know, down the residential schools, and do so, you know, thoughtfully and critically. But he can't even do that. You know, he can't. He can't even say the basic thing, which is residential schools are bad. You know, which is the least one can ask someone to
bar.
Do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is that gaffe. It is a pretty bad gaffe. Yep.
Yeah, and that folks has been the gaffe corner, and we're now going to go into cool person shit, which is essentially our miscellaneous file for these Canadians that we talk about. Cool person shit. We say that ironically, or maybe not ironically. Who can tell anymore? It's postmodernism, baby. Who can say? All right, so welcome to Cool Person Shit, our miscellaneous section for the cool things that these people do. You know, cool in quotation marks. Taylor, what else has Aaron O'Toole done?
Yeah, you know, this might, I'm sure it will come as a surprise to some of you, actually, might, considering his whole climate change spiel. But he loves, as a conservative, he loves the pipelines. He loves the oil.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, a big thing with his whole climate change is real thing. I mean, conservatives, again, their actual policy for it isn't out yet. I have very low expectations. But even operating within the lens that climate change is real, their approach to it is not really to address it, right? It's to create more jobs and maybe green jobs, but really they still support the pipelines. You know, he recently commented on how, you know, we still want Keystone XL. Biden's a piece of shit for saying he's going to shut it down and cancel it. And another pipeline, the Line 5, which I believe is between Lake Michigan and Lake Huron. Yeah, so there's some stuff with that too, and he's saying, you know, keep this going. So he's a very pro-pipeline, pro-oil guy, and you kind of have to be as a conservative, especially appealing to the western provinces, Alberta specifically. But, yeah, so not really surprised there. Again, when we look at climate policy, I mean, look at Justin Trudeau, right? Spending billions of dollars on a pipeline while also, like, parading as a party that actually cares about the environment. Like, you don't. It's okay. Just say you don't. So, yeah.
I appreciate a party that's honest about what it wants. Aaron O'Toole wants to be seen as both a climate change activist, I guess, and also a pipeline activist. And those two don't go together. You can try to reconcile the differences, but they don't ultimately reconcile.
No.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and that is, you know, just another thing he shares in common with Trudeau. You know, closer than we think. That's it. That's all I got for that cool person shit content.
Okay. So the next thing, and this is another thing that he introduced into his leadership campaign proposal, again, not yet to be enacted into the actual policy of the Canadian, or into the Conservative Party, and that is moving the Canadian embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, which is a move that Donald Trump did during his presidency. And so the thing about this move is that, you know, obviously there are huge conflicts between Israelis and Palestinians in the region. Long history there, a lot to get into. We won't do that now, of course. But the move of the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem will just further rise tensions in the area. Palestinians won't see that they have a ally in Canada, just as they don't see that they have an ally in the US. And, you know, the peace talks, whatever, that's going on continuously. The conflict between them will just be further exasperated by this move. You know, back in 1979, Prime Minister Joe Clark, he decided to, that he promised that he would move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. He sent one of his confidants there, a former leader in the Conservative Party, to go and check out the situation in Israel, in Palestine. And he came back and said, yeah, don't move it there. Don't do that. That's just going to make matters worse. And, you know, even if matters aren't made extremely worse, they're still negatively contributing to the tensions in the region.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason he's doing this is because he wants to, again, comport himself to the social conservatives in his base, especially the evangelicals.
Right.
You know, and again, you know, you can talk about the social conservative angle of this move, but also there are real economic interests in having Israel as an established province or country or state, rather, in that region. So there's more than just a social conservative bone throwing, you know. Again, it's too much to get into, but essentially, you know, Aaron O'Toole is not that much different from Donald Trump in his policies, especially on this matter. He is quite conservative, very conservative, and he throws his bones to both those who have an interest in Israel being an established state and those who want to believe that it will be the new Jerusalem, you know, the evangelical types.
Yeah.
Again, it's a very complicated matter. I won't go too much into it, but I think most political analysts can agree that the move from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem is only a negative one, especially for those Palestinians who are displaced where they live and persecuted daily. Yeah, and that's about all I can say on the issue right now. We might do a further episode on this because it's an issue that deserves a greater analysis than what I can offer right now. But yeah, Aaron O'Toole, he's making a very classical mistake.
Yeah. I'm just going to say that... Oh, fuck. My mic was falling. Okay, God.
God, what a disaster. Let's just not talk about China.
No, we have to talk about China. We have to talk about it.
But we have to talk about China.
It's necessary. We're doing it. I'll just say that. So on the 22nd of February, there was a vote passed in the House of Commons that recognizes that China's treatment of the Uyghurs, that China's treatment of the Uyghurs is genocide. And this was a conservative motion put forward, and it passed overwhelmingly with 266 votes to zero. The liberal cabinet, the entire cabinet, abstained from voting, but every other party voted, and again, it's to zero, so they all voted for this motion to pass. So there's a lot to say here. You know, for the conservatives, they really wanted this to pass. They're passionate about it, and the NDP as well made comments about how, you know, it's important to make this statement and call out China for the genocide that it has been accused of. We've seen that the US as well has condemned China. And, you know, there's a lot to say about this issue. And again, we can't go too deep into it. I'll say that for myself personally, I don't doubt that. Like, okay, I'll say that, you know, on the left, as somebody who's decently online on Twitter quite a bit, one of the things I notice is that when we look at international, you know, geopolitical issues especially, you kind of get extreme responses going either way, where you're either getting, in this context, an extreme kind of U.S. imperial national response, nationalist response, where you're kind of getting these anti-China, these anti-China fear-mongering kind of responses that are super extreme and are kind of pushed as well by these politicians, you know, Joe Biden, whatever, who it is, Ottawa, Washington, you know, they're feigning this outrage at whatever's going on. Or you can go the other direction and get extreme pro-China, a pro-China response, which is kind of denying that there is any wrongdoing, that, you know, in these camps, nothing is happening, they're totally fine, you know. That kind of narrative, right? So for me, I think that we kind of have to remember, I don't know, like, you shouldn't go and an extreme in any direction, in my opinion. And we have to be mindful, of course, of where we're getting our news from and how that can be kind of serving the U.S. imperial, whatever it may be, that kind of narrative. But we still have to be critical, of course, right, of these human rights abuses that are happening. But I think it's also important to recognize the hypocrisy of a government like Canada or the U.S. critiquing these systems while, for example, you know, we still have Indigenous people in Canada who do not have clean water, who are still facing what, you know, some would say is an ongoing genocide. You know, look at missing and murdered Indigenous women. In the States, you know, you have the prison system, the most prisoners in the world, that kind of stuff. So I think it's important to be mindful.
Yeah, the new Jim Crow,
yeah,
as an author put it.
Yeah, totally. The new Jim Crow. And
this makes Jim Crow look like Jim Eagle.
I think it's important to be critical of our governments, too, in their critique of China. But that's not to say we can't critique China. Just be mindful of, okay, what is this serving our governments? You know, this kind of outrage, whatever statements they're making, are they trying to distract from themselves? That kind of thing. But what are your thoughts?
So yeah, my thoughts on the issue, you know, obviously it's a complicated matter, you know, with, you know, critique of China, you know, first of all, you have to deal with the fact that there is a lot of racism towards Asian Americans, immigrants from Asia, you know, and a critique of China for a lot of people ends up being a critique or just bigotry towards Asian Americans or Asians living in their state, living in Canada, living in Western states. And that's obviously a horrible thing. And that should not be, those issues should not be conflated, but they obviously are. And obviously rhetoric towards rhetoric against China translates to many people's minds to bigotry and racism and hatred. So, you know, that's a very difficult line to walk because to me, there are obviously things within China's state, within the state of China, that are very much worth critiquing. They've done terrible, horrible things. But yeah, you know, China is an imperialist state in a lot of ways. And like, you know, the US or even Canada in a lot of ways, or Britain, rather the UK, you know, imperialism is worth critiquing. But there are other lines within this. Again, no, it's so complicated.
Yeah, no, I think you're making sense. Like, again, the important thing is, you know, like, I think a lot of the racism as well is that so much of the media, you know, like mainstream news outlets, governments, all of that, the way they approach it is not that, you know, they aren't really interested in critiquing the imperialism, especially the governments, right? Like, they don't actually care about what's going on there, right? They are spinning a story that will serve them, and that will kind of reinforce U.S. and Western imperialism. So we just need to be mindful of that. And, you know, when you look at racism and how a lot of the mainstream outlets approach these stories, it is very much from an extreme angle. So, of course, you know, and, you know, when all you're seeing is the headlines like, you know, here's 10 ways China will eat your babies or something like that, right? Like, you're going to take something away from that. You're not going in.
Yeah,
to these articles.
The one child eat policy that they famously enacted.
Yeah, like you're not going in critically thinking, basically, or, you know, the purpose these articles serve is different from the kind of analysis you would like to see. An article that I would recommend reading, which goes into this in pretty good depth, you know, it's more of an overview, but it also provides, you know, links to other articles. I'd really recommend it. It's called The Class Struggle in Geopolitics by John Clark in the Canadian Dimension. So if you're interested in reading more about this and kind of from a leftist perspective that doesn't immediately go in that direction, which is, you know, pro-China, I'd really recommend reading this article. So yeah, again, it's like a complicated issue, but we wanted to mention it because we feel like it's important.
Yeah, and Aaron O'Toole is not doing very much good in this conversation, in this dialogue, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. No.
Yeah. No, he's going to take, you know, if you have a hammer, every problem's a nail, as the cliche goes. I hate to say it, but, you know.
How dare you?
If every country is a communist country, then.
Right.
Or I fucked it up. And it's okay. Anyways, Aaron O'Toole is not going to handle this problem very well. No. And, you know, I mean, Justin Trudeau would probably just wander into Beijing, you know, dressed as a dragon. And be like, let's be cool.
You know, being culturally
the wowie
aware.
Thing never happened.
Yeah, of course. That's our good boy.
But yeah, I think that ends it for our normal segment. I think we'll head into the debrief period.
All right.
Where we kind of just give our concluding thoughts on Aaron O'Toole. So Taylor, any concluding thoughts on our boy, Aaron O'Toole?
Our boy.
The blue-eyed savior of Canada.
Yeah, that's him. Yeah. No, I thought this was a pretty interesting episode for me. He's definitely perplexing. Especially, yeah, just that snake-like motion to poor Derek Sloan, you know? Got a feel for him. I don't, but it was interesting for me to talk about. And, like, yeah, the whole climate change thing, I think this is not good for the Conservative Party. I think they've been a mess for a while now, and that's going to continue. So, which is good for me, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. I just say again, you know, Aaron O'Toole exemplifies the contradictions in the Conservative Party, and he's not going to resolve them. Not at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if anyone can.
Yeah. I agree.
So Taylor, our question is, how many Maple Leafs out of 10 do you give Aaron O'Toole? 1 being very bad, 10 being very good.
Okay.
What would you give Aaron O'Toole out of 10?
Well, you know, thinking about it. So while he is, I don't think he's very good for the Conservative Party, because I was thinking, oh, I could vote higher if I think he's going to kind of fuck everything up. But honestly... I the climate change thing is so stupid. I'm gonna give him a 3. He blew it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
A 3.
I know. Hot take over here.
Okay. All right. You thrown on the gauntlet. A 3 out of 10. You know, I'm gonna have to actually agree with you. Before I asked this question, I was thinking I'm gonna give him a 3 as well.
All right. There it is.
You know, he's not Andrew Scheer or Stephen Harper level. You know, he's at least trying to be socially progressive, you know, as hypocritical.
Though?
Well,
is
okay,
he?
Okay. Well, on a very surface level, at least he's doing that. At least he's being surface level socially progressive, whereas, you know, predecessors to him have not even tried that. So if that's a change in society... However small, I welcome it.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Very small, I know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. 3 out of 10 Maple Leafs. Damn.
3 out of 10.
Harsh.
Yeah. From both
that's
of
what
us.
What he deserves.
We both agree.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess that concludes our episode for today. You can find us at peoplekindpolitics.com. And on that website, you can find links to all the platforms that we're available on.
Agree. And all of our social media, because talking about each social media handle at the end is very annoying. And also you can find it in the
show
notes.
I'm still going to do that.
But also you should,
yeah.
We have to tell people to rate us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. We got to get in
One star, please, folks. I want one star.
No, we got to get in that hot new category. I can't remember what it's called, but yeah.
I want you to be honest with how you rate us.
No, don't be honest. Just 5 stars, man. No, I mean, yeah, I agree. Be honest. But if your honesty is 1 star, then don't. It's okay. We don't need
to. No, please do. All right.
Yeah.
So also follow us on Twitter at PeepKindPolitik and on Instagram at PeopleKindPolitics. That's one word. And on Facebook at PeopleKindPolitics. That's two words.
So annoying. We need to we're going to figure out how to synchronize.
That's how we're doing it.
No, I just want to.
That's how we're doing it. I've written it down. It's real.
I'm not saying we're not doing it, but I'm saying we need to get consistent across platforms so we don't have to, But also, you should probably tell your friends about this, Have people in your life you think would find this
interesting.
Tell
your grandpa.
Tell your super conservative grandpa. He would love it. I'm sure he'd love us.
Your racist uncle. Tell him as well.
Yeah.
Please support us.
Just share it with people. Tell us your thoughts. We got got an email up on our website. DM us.
You've probably stopped listening by now. That's okay.
Devastating.
We love you anyways. Taylor, this is a podcast that we did. Mm-hmm. And this is a place for Canadian regurgitation.
Oh yeah, that's the bit.